Hello, and welcome to Awin Talks, the affiliate marketing podcast. I'm Rob Davidson, content analyst in Awin's global strategy team, and I'm joined by my co-host, Kevin Edwards, our global strategy director. Hi, Kev.
Hi, Rob. Hey, Dan.
Good, thank you. And with Joelle now on maternity leave, we're also joined today by special guest host Lee Metters, who has taken on Joelle's role as client partner for retail and travel at Awin UK. Welcome, Lee.
Hello, both. Good to be here. Thank you.
Good to have you. So, obviously, I myself have been off for the last couple of months on paternity leave. Have I missed anything? And more importantly, has the affiliate industry missed me?
Well, I guess you've probably missed some sleep.
I've definitely missed that. You can say that again.
Well, you've missed PI Live, which we're going to talk about in a bit.
Indeed.
I don't think anything else earth-shattering's happened.
No, fair enough.
We launched our 1,000th Awin Access program.
Okay, that's quite a milestone to have hit.
Yep.
Well, on this month's pod, we've got another jam-packed episode, including Kevin's upcoming interview with Leanne Johnston, founder of the agency Affiliate Insider and a true veteran of the wider performance industry. I'll also be speaking shortly to Sami El-Chahali from the French cashback publisher Igral to find out more about the state of affiliate marketing in France. And Craig will also be here to give his number of the month to us. Before all that, though, what has been capturing your attention in the industry over the last month? Kev, let's start with you.
Yeah, so I was going to briefly talk about our PI Live session, which I just mentioned. So Adam Ross, Awin CEO, presented at PI Live in, well, it was May, wasn't it? It was this month. And he chose the topic of, or starting point of ad spend, IAB ad spend study, which came out in April, which showed that the amount brands and agencies are spending on affiliate marketing grew by around about the same amount, same percentage amount as the five big tech giants. So Apple, Facebook, Google, Amazon, and Microsoft. And that growth was about 10%. And when you contrast it to that, the non-big five growth, actually overall digital shrank by 9%. So you have a contrast there between the shrinking of 9% for digital in general versus 10% affiliate growth. So we felt that was a really good starting point and a natural point for us to explore why affiliate marketing did so well last year outside of the obvious sort of pandemic related surge in online spend. And we focused in on four elements that we thought were really instrumental in that growth. And the first was is the growth of mass media publishers, so companies like Future and Condé Nast, and we look specifically at Future's affiliate revenues and then delved a little bit deeper into why we think that it seems to be a really good opportunity at the moment and why they're seeing such growth at the moment. And I think Future have just announced that their affiliate revenues are up something like 100% year on year. And one of the things that I found that was really interesting about Future is that they talk about how they've really diversified their advertiser portfolio. So they're wanting to work with more and more advertisers, which is great for networks. And they're diversifying away from just a kind of an over-reliance on Amazon, which I thought was quite interesting.
Just to jump in there, actually, because I read that same report of theirs, and it's really interesting some of their strategic acquisitions that they've been making, which seem to be kind of bringing in some publishers. So they bought GoCompare, was that last year, I think?
Yeah.
And that ability to kind of acquire a publisher that's been hugely successful in this particular channel and then to almost use its technology and use its comparison functionality across maybe other elements of the business, I think is really interesting. And so they've got the whole funnel almost across their portfolio. So whether you're going from awareness and content and all of the great stuff that they produce around the inspiration phase there, and then you're getting into more of the kind of comparison side of things and driving it down into where conversions are likely to then be happening. And you've got all of that activity now kind of being incorporated across all different elements of their business.
Yeah, I definitely recommend checking out their reports. Their Q1 report has,
I think it's
H1 because they're accounting year, but that report that's just come out is really, really interesting. They go into loads of detail. They kind of analyze some of their core key properties, key websites. And it's a really interesting picture of how a company has sort of transitioned from traditional print to digital. And so I definitely recommend having a look at that. A couple of the other points, or three of the other points that we covered off in the presentation very briefly. So the second was about how brands are repositioning themselves as affiliates in their own right. They're seeing the affiliate channel as an opportunity to drive loyalty and customer retention. So they're adopting affiliate models themselves. So we briefly covered off that, and we used our taste card example, case study that we've talked about on this podcast previously. The third point we talked about was the outsourced technology, outsourced innovation, which again is a key theme in the AWIN report. And I think that we're really starting to see brands, again, coming back to your point about how publishers are sort of getting involved at different stages in the purchase cycle, we're definitely seeing that in terms of advertisers wanting to use technology that helps them optimize the path to purchase. And the last point that we covered off was obviously, and I mentioned our 1,000th AWIN Access program, that SME product has sort of really taken off for us. And we've really sort of, I think through a combination of us really trying, really understanding who the customer is and what the customer needs, we've seen like a real sort of surge in demand for that. And that's continuing to sort of grow exponentially month on month. So all of those four things, I think, have coalesced. And that's what we wanted to draw out in the presentation.
Great. And that the recording of that particular presentation, that's now available. Am I right in saying so?
You can view Adam's presentation in full on awin.com.
Great. Lee, did you catch much of PI Live?
I did, yeah.
Enjoyed it?
Yeah, I listened to a couple of the talks. I think, do you know what? It's always different, isn't it, in a virtual world? But I think the team at PI Live did a fantastic job of just making all of the content available online. But I still think there's something to be said for actually just getting in the room and actually getting to kind of talk and meet new delegates from around the industry. So hopefully, fingers crossed, that will be back before long. But the event was great.
Yeah, no, I do hope that, I didn't think I'd say this actually, that I hope that conferences come back, but you do miss that social element, don't you? It's just not the same drinking a beer on your own in front of a laptop screen. Now, you've been pretty busy yourself since you've made the shift into the client partner team, haven't you? Doing a lot of content production and various webinar guest appearances. So tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, so it's been an insanely busy month, but I wouldn't have it any other way. So I did a co-host webinar with Shreesh Rama, the co-founder and CEO of Increasingly. Obviously, Google's latest algorithm update is called a bit of a star with their core web vitals. So Shri actually kind of like took the viewers through that and kind of what all of those different metrics mean. So the LCPs, the FIDs, the CLSs.
That's a lot of acronyms. Yeah.
We really broke that down and kind of looked at how Increasingly as a solution as well could help different kind of advertiser sites kind of combat against those Google updates. But then Shri and I guess then talked about how Increasingly kind of can support advertisers at AWIN through the AWIN master tag. So I guess just really building on Adam's PR Live talk around the outsourcing innovation point. Increasingly are obviously a fantastic kind of technology partner of ours. So we broke that down and yeah, put some questions to Shri, which he answered. Amen.
Great. And what about the IMRG stuff? Kev, that's another acronym. What does that stand for? Internet.
Oh, God.
I got the first one right. Something. What's the M? Retail group is RG, right?
You carry on.
Right, you Google it. Yeah. You see how good their SEO is.
I also wrote a content piece for IMRG. It looked at how, I guess, retailers taking the digital disruption that we've seen in the past 12 months, how they can use that to really integrate an omnichannel marketing strategy. So I think one of the things that we have seen in the last 12 months is that a number of shoppers have really kind of sprung online. It is looking now at post-pandemic how the majority of retailers, I guess, were probably pre-pandemic, were treating the offline and the online marketing mixes is very siloed marketing channels, but it's now looking at taking all of those kind of online learnings that we've seen in the past 12 months, how brands can actually integrate that into a joined up marketing approach.
Mm.
So I covered three core areas within that. The first was the future of in-store retail, which I think is an immensely detailed project with lots of diverse opinions. So I won't go into that too much, but the article looked at how retailers could link their in-store and their online marketing activity with Cardlink Cashback. Mm-hmm. So Awin obviously partnered with a leading grocery retailer and we saw 4% increase in the number of in-store sales and then obviously increased their basket spend by 23% as well. So that is a case study that's available within the Awin report. So plug to go in.
Good shout out.
But yeah, I think the in-store cashback point is incredibly interesting anyway, because I think the pandemic will actually speed up the transition to a cashless society. So there's been a lot of research in that space, and I think that is a transition that we will see, and it will allow brands to kind of stay at the forefront of that.
Yeah.
The second point was then around geolocation technology and the channel's ability to actually target customers in a specific location with push notifications. So not something this a new technology by any means. It's been around for a little while, but still an interesting, I guess, marketing strategy to drive in-store footfall. Mm-hmm. And then the final point then really was just looking at how through our partnership with Singleview, we can help brands really understand the value of different touch points in a multi-channel marketing journey. Understanding where the kind of the key points of interaction were and how you apportion your marketing budget accordingly. So yeah. I think there's a huge opportunity for brands to actually try and link their in-store and their kind of online marketing activity, especially as we kind of come out of post-pandemic. So it's an interesting time for sure.
Yeah. And I mean, obviously, as lockdown restrictions do start to lift, and particularly in the UK where we're all based currently, what kind of changes are you starting to see in the retail sector as far as Awin's tracking?
Yeah, so we looked at the performance for the month kind of since April the 12th, which is when in the UK non-essential retail was able to reopen. And sales, I guess, like for like versus the month previous were down around 14%. Clicks were down 11% across the retail sector. So I think what that suggests is that customers are still browsing online, but perhaps much needed retail therapy. They're actually getting out on the high street and getting in store. Interesting, we actually saw AOV up by about 3 percentage points. And I think that's something to be kind of optimistic about, that customers are actually spending a little bit more online. I think context is important. And if we compare that to 2019, which I guess we take as like the old normal to some respects, we're still up over 100% from where we were in 2019. So it's difficult to compare it against something 2 years ago. I appreciate that. But I think the context is that online has grown so immensely in the last 12 months that actually a 14% drop month on month isn't something that I think brands should be too concerned about.
Yeah, I think you've got to take the long view, haven't you, given last year just how extraordinary it was.
Yeah, we're still seeing some good growth performance across some categories as well. I think one of the ones that we have seen boom is the gaming and PC category that we track at Awin. That's largely been caused, I think, by the restocking of the PS5 and the Xbox Series X. But it does still show that customers are in market and looking to purchase online if the kind of the product is there.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting, really interesting. I'm sure you'll have plenty of content that you'll be producing around all of those trends in the coming months as well. Now, as if there wasn't the pandemic wasn't one obstacle enough or one hurdle enough to have to overcome, while I was off, Apple finally pushed the red button on the iOS 14.5 update, which enacted their new app tracking transparency framework, requiring users to opt into being tracked by individual apps. Now, if you haven't had a chance to explore the new Awin report, another plug, we have a whole section dedicated to the state of app tracking in the affiliate industry at the moment and why it's so important for programs to incorporate app tracking today. In that chapter, I spoke to Awin's app specialist, Clementine Lavender, and you can hear her thoughts on the potential fallout from ATT being enacted by Apple in that particular chapter. That chat was recorded before it all went live, though, so it's been interesting to see what the wider industry has been reporting so far on the early response to the new framework. Inevitably, at this stage, there's a lot of confusion around what's being reported. There are all sorts of different numerous factors that need to be taken into account when calculating these kind of broad opt-in rates across different sectors, different regions, whether the app is for an advertiser or a publisher, etc. Not to mention that only a minority of iPhone users have actually upgraded to the new OS at this stage, meaning that conventional app tracking will continue to function for those that haven't necessarily upgraded and aren't receiving those opt-in notifications. Now, I've seen lots of different equations being used to calculate average opt-in rates, and the range of percentages for opt-ins varies all the way from less than 1% to up to 60%, depending on how the calculations are being done. So it's safe to assume that there's not an awful lot of consensus on where we stand today as far as the wider industry is concerned. Now, from Awin's perspective, we're currently assessing the impact of the changes on those programs with app tracking enabled. And I'm hoping that in the next month, we should have an update to share with you. And in fact, I'm really hoping that we can get Clem back onto the podcast to discuss all the ramifications of this for Awin and the wider affiliate industry in more detail. So stay tuned for updates on that.
So today I'm joined by Leanne Johnston. So Leanne has a long history of working in the affiliate marketing industry. She's got more than two decades of affiliate marketing expertise under her belt. She's run large global affiliate programs across retail, finance, and the iGaming industry. Today she's the founder of Affiliate Insider, a boutique affiliate marketing agency helping brands launch, scale, and grow successful affiliate programs. And they recently launched Affiliate Manager Performance Program, which is a 12-week coaching program for affiliate marketers who want to level up. So Leanne, thank you for joining us today. Some of our listeners will probably be familiar with you and what you do, but can you sort of give us a little bit of a background, kind of a bit of an elevator pitch as to sort of where you've come from and kind of what you're currently up to?
Yeah, so I started in affiliate marketing a long time ago, almost two decades ago, working in retail and finance, and then moved over into the iGaming space. And I realized that there was a gap in the market for skills development. You know, affiliate management is changing on the fly all the time. And in order to be really good at it, you have to be really immersed in it. And so skills development and training was sort of falling behind because you were learning second or third hand from whoever had learned before you. And so skills development and tactics were really, nobody was really focusing on that. So we sort of started Affiliate Insider to kind of bridge the gap of knowledge and skill, and then also help our clients to benefit from that knowledge and skill because we're immersed in it all the time. So as you said, we're a boutique agency focusing on affiliate program launching, scaling, and growing those, and helping affiliate managers in agencies, networks, and client side, you know, get a breadth and depth of knowledge and confidence to run their programs successfully.
Great. Okay. So I think, certainly, you know, we sort of only really connected recently but you've been in the industry for a long time, as have I. And I think probably one of the reasons for that is because you have quite a long standing history of working in the iGaming sector.
Yes.
And I mean, feel free to disagree with me if you think I'm wrong here, but I think it's fair to say, certainly from my perspective, that it feels like it's emerged as sort of quite a standalone channel compared to maybe retail or travel or telco, the bits that I'm more familiar with. So is that sort of something that you agree with? And if so, why do you think that is?
Yes, 100%. I mean, there are gaming companies that do use, you know, third-party networks to run their programs conjointly, but the predominantly in iGaming, because of the competitive nature of the industry and because technology advanced a lot quicker in this channel compared to using networks, brands developed their own technology. So they were able to take everything in-house quite quickly. Skills development, they invested quite a lot in people and resources in order to grow their businesses and to cut their margins. So the network model just sort of, it became like a long tail appendage instead of the main event. And companies invested quite a lot over the years to actually build their digital strategy, their digital marketing teams in-house. One of the other things is also you've got to look at the revenue share model. So, you know, when you're earning 30% or 50% of whatever gets deposited, wagered, and lost at a casino, there's a very big revenue model there for affiliates versus what they would earn in a retail space or in finance or telco or any of the other channels. You know, 13% of a $30 sale or you know, $50 sale is much less than what an affiliate is getting in the gaming space. So the margins of cost allowed us to actually take things in-house faster. And you know, I see a lot of in the retail space, and correct me if I'm wrong, brands looking to sort of take some of their publisher relationships or even B2B or influencer relationships in-house, but then still utilizing the breadth and depth and knowledge that a network complements to help them to grow and scale their businesses. So we're almost seeing the flip side happen now. outside of gaming. And we're seeing gaming clients actually meet and launch their programs into networks so they can also expand their reach, because audiences are everywhere all the time. And so looking at channels doesn't actually help you with your affiliate program. You need to be looking at traffic driving from multiple different devices, from different types. You know, we've got push notification. We've got influencers in social media that have changed the affiliate space. We've got extensions on browsers that have changed the affiliate space. And networks help with that because you can integrate with multiple publishers in one platform, making it really simple from a tech perspective and also from an account management and relationship perspective. So I think, yeah, it did change. It is changing and things are merging together. But certainly for the last couple of years or decades, gaming definitely took the lead in terms of taking program management strategy and tech in-house.
Okay, yeah, I think there's definitely, it feels like there's a definite sort of convergence where everybody is recognizing the value of all of these different partnerships now in a way that previously they haven't. Mm. And I wonder kind of why you think that is.
I mean, I think because we want the learnings. You know, when you take things in-house, you're only really learning from your own stuff, whereas you're not leveraging the knowledge and the data share and the insight that agencies or networks provide. And I think this is what clients are seeing, is that they can leverage the breadth and expertise from everybody in this ecosystem, whether you're working agency side, client side, or network side. And so having that touch point across your affiliate program is becoming more important, because you want to be able to learn from other people's mistakes, perhaps. You want to be able to fast track your own marketing. And working with agencies, networks, alongside your own internal teams helps you to build that data piece and to build that picture of where it is that you want to actually promote and market your products and services.
So you're getting more, as you mentioned, you're getting more involved in retail affiliate marketing. You mentioned some of the differences. What are you seeing in terms of some of the parallels and similarities?
So some of the parallels are obviously active management techniques. I mean, I think in the retail space, there's been a massive push towards reliance on sort of voucher codes, loyalty sites, incentive. You know, they've built massive customer databases. They can tie in retail and online. And for that sector, it's been incredibly important. But I think across the board, active management techniques still prevail. Like whether you're in a network, whether you're not, whether you're retail, whether you're gambling, the first thing that you need to be doing is actively managing your publishers so that you're getting the best out of them. The other thing is strategy and planning across all the digital channels. One thing that I've noticed working both retail and gaming is that, you know, things like attribution modeling and working in silos, the affiliate model in retail is included in the digital acquisition strategy. Whereas in gaming still, it's kind of working in a silo. So what the affiliate team does doesn't really touch some of the other digital channels. It's only now starting to kind of converge. And I think, you know, the price-led versus relationship-led. You know, in gaming, pricing is what it is, but you don't see highly competitive pricing like you do with retail publishers. You know, it's like 15% this month and then 20% that month. And everybody's like competing to try and get that share of volume. Whereas in gaming, we're more relationship-led. Like affiliates will work with you because they know you, trust you, like you, and they're into your product, regardless of what your price point is. And more often than not, in gaming, if somebody's offering you too much, you kind of back away from it and go, something's not right with that picture. You know, whereas with retail, you don't really get that problem. You'll say, yes, please, thank you.
That would be a nice problem to have in retail.
Absolutely. So, and I think the pricing strategies really dictate the way that you work with your publishers. Because some, you know, margins of cost, I mean, you can't give away your profit. You have to find ways to work with the right publishers at the right time, at the right price point, in order to make your affiliate program a profitable channel for your business. So yeah, those are the main key things that I've noticed, over the last couple of years as I'm dipping in and out of both spaces.
You sort of answered my next question really, because you're talking about, you know, the really investing in the relationships and how that's historically has been really important for the sectors that you've worked in. But I guess, are there any kind of additional lessons that we can learn about how to work better with affiliate partners, how to sort of treat it more as an equal partnership, I guess?
Well, this is it. It's going in with the right mindset. And I think experienced affiliate managers marketers like us, you know, we've learned that lesson over the last two decades. going in with the right mindset to actually make a collaborative partnership and making sure that your program terms and conditions give affiliates freedom to try things. Because when you restrain them too much, you're actually missing out on the value that they bring to your organization in terms of, you know, the things that they can afford to try that you perhaps can't with your budget. So where I think gaming has really allowed affiliates to have free rein, sometimes that's bitten them in the butt, especially with the revenue share model, which is lifetime. So, you know, culling some of that negative, you know, fraudulent behavior can be difficult if your terms haven't been set up correctly. But also, I think, you know, giving affiliates freedom to try new things and channels and things that you don't necessarily want to spend your direct budget on is a good idea. So, you know, I still, rightly or wrongly, and shoot me if I'm wrong, but, you know, restricting your affiliates on anything other than branded keyword terms is stupid in my mind. Like, you should give them free rein to go and do PPC on long tail keywords because you're not spending that money there. So let them try and bring you the customers instead. Mm. That's just one key area, but also on paid advertising, you know, let affiliates go try different traffic sources for you on a performance-based model. What's the harm? As long as they're advertising, you know, your brand in a way that you've approved, you know, the creatives are pre-approved and supplied by you, why not let them go and have a chance at doing more sales for you on a performance-based model? So I think affiliate managers try and over-control the traffic sources, and they're also maybe not being more liberal with where and how they spend their money. Because I believe that an affiliate manager's role right now is to be a fund manager. They're responsible for a certain amount of revenue, and they need to spend that revenue to get the maximum amount of ROI for their brand. So when you try and restrict what is an affiliate and what isn't an affiliate, I think that's where you come into a problem. Because as we're seeing, media publishers are starting to go onto performance-based models too.
Yeah. Yeah, we're definitely seeing that as a very significant trend on the network. So we've obviously painted a really positive picture here, but are there things that you think affiliates need to do better? Are there things that they should be doing that actually would benefit, well, everybody involved in the relationship?
Yeah. I mean, the other thing that I would say affiliates need to do better is communicate better. They tend to be busy doing what they're doing, busy making money, busy earning, busy driving traffic, but they don't communicate with their account manager or affiliate manager to actually say, hey, I've seen this gap, or I want to try this thing. So often getting information out of affiliates because they're busy is difficult. So making sure that your team, you know, has regular one-to-ones with your affiliates, that you educate your affiliate on trends that you're seeing. It really has to be a two-way conversation. And sometimes it's not, you know, because of time, because, yeah, you know, you just don't have those personal relationships. You can't manage everybody one-to-one. But I think it's important to kind of look at that, even if it's once a quarter, to try and get your affiliates on a call and or in a working lunch, or just educate them about some of the things that are happening in your business, can make a huge difference to how they relate to you as a business partner as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that when we see the affiliate relationship work best, it is when brands take a far more flexible approach to the capabilities that affiliates can bring to the relationship. I just wanted to ask you before we wrap up the interview today. So you've already touched on a couple of trends that we're seeing, one of which is, you know, the growth of mass media publishers. We've talked on this podcast outside of this interview as well about some of the other trends that we saw in 2020 driving growth for the affiliate channel. What's kind of some of the key drivers that you see happening maybe second half of this year into 2022?
So I think that there's two areas that I think are important. I think influencers, more micro influencers, the rise of micro influencers and how you utilize them as publishers in your program. I think we're all having a lot of learnings with that. I also think, you know, understanding paid media and all the changes that are happening with, you know, privacy policies and Google and Facebook and, you know, 28-day cookie periods to 7-day cookie periods and all of that kind of stuff is going to become more important as data becomes more visible and as we can track things more accurately as technology advances. And then I also think that the lines between affiliates and media are blurring. So we're going to have a lot of learnings. We're going to need to invest in testing and trying things again in order to learn what works as the ecosystem around us is changing. So I think those are the kind of key things and obviously B2B partnerships as well. I think that's becoming more to the fore, and that was as a result of COVID. So just seeing where those trends are going to go is quite interesting for me, and that's what I'm going to be keeping my eyes on as we move forward.
I definitely think brands feel a little bit more free this year. It definitely feels like the pandemic has kind of expedited change and freed brands up to be a bit more flexible and creative. And that can only be a good thing when you're dealing with this whole sort of world of affiliates that can effectively tap into so many different sources of traffic. So, definitely going to be a really, really interesting second half of the year, and definitely a really interesting Q4 as well. So, Leanne, thanks very much. I know that it's been a pretty whirlwind interview today, but it's been really useful, I think, for our listeners, and really interesting for me to chat to you. If people want to find out a little bit more about you and your work, where should they go?
Just hit me up on affiliateinsider.com or come and find me on LinkedIn. And my name's Leanne Johnston.
Great. Well, thanks very much for joining us today, Leanne.
Thank you so much for having me, Kevin. It's been a pleasure.
So I'm joined now by Sami El-Chahali, Global Head of Sales at the leading French cashback publisher, Igra, which is part of Global Savings Group. Hi, Sami. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hi, thanks for inviting me.
I wanted to kick things off actually just by asking you what you think distinguishes the French digital advertising industry from other regions around the world.
Well, I would say that the French market, it's quite similar to other countries and other regions regarding the digital advertising industry overall. I would say we use and manage more or less the same technologies and solutions. Brands and advertisers are doing quite in a similar way what we see in other countries. One of the differences that I can notice is the usage of mobile and the combination of both on and offline advertising and consuming. We are still a bit late in France versus other regions, for example, in the UK or even far from here, like in Asia. There is no longer any frontiers between on and offlines. In France, it's just starting now, and it's also accelerating following this COVID situation.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I mean, looking more specifically, I guess, at the affiliate channel, what do you think is the general perception by advertisers and brands in the French region on the industry?
I think, and I can say that today, the affiliate channel is well perceived by the markets. A long time ago, it was like beginning the 2015, it was starting to slowing down because of the display advertising that has grew up with retargeting and all this personalization or different kind of personalization campaigns. But now advertisers and brands have understood how high the impact of the affiliate channel has on key KPIs. And for now, 2-3 years, we see the revenues and investments are increasing overall on the affiliate. And the other reason I would say is that affiliate is more than a channel. It's a business model. That's why you can see all kind of advertising activities within the affiliate programs, and more publishers have opened their businesses to the affiliates. It's true for display advertising that used to be worked on different models and not CPA. And now it's more and more CPA business models. But it's also true for all the commerce content or influence marketing. And what we can actually see, it's a kind of shift of the publisher weight in the affiliate mix from a brand or advertiser. They are working more and more with these new types of publishers.
Yeah, it sounds like there's a real growing trend in adoption of the affiliate model from across a wide range of different businesses and sectors there. I wondered, what do you think are, do you think there are still many challenges or hurdles that need to be overcome for the French affiliate industry right now?
Actually, yes, there is, for me, there is one main challenge that is quite old. It's an old one, I would say. It's how to make affiliate marketing budget unlimited in a year basis, as long as the commission is paid only when revenues are generated. It's a very old challenge, and we still see today advertisers that are sometimes cutting or reducing investments before the end of the year. It's what you can do on other channels, but on the affiliate, I still don't understand how we can make it unlimited, as we are all paid on a performance basis and based on the revenues generated.
Now, I wanted to just quickly ask you about the effects of the pandemic, which have been quite profound right across the globe. And in terms of your own market, I wondered, how has the coronavirus really impacted those shopping habits from consumers locally? And what do you think, do you expect to see a permanent increase in e-commerce adoption because of it?
Absolutely. It's we all saw the e-commerce overall and globally strongly increased in the last year since March. People are buying more online. That's obvious versus offline. But at the same time, what we experienced in France was quite unique, I think, in the world. We've seen lots of top retailers that reduced and or stopped partnering with publishers because of the COVID and because they saw their website performances grow very, very, the performances were automatically stronger than before. So they reduced the investments, and it's quite strange because now, thanks to the COVID, they didn't need any more publishers like they used to. But at the same time, the impact of this was, it was good for publishers. It's because we had lower dependency on retailers, and we saw brands and manufacturers investing a lot more than before. The brands and manufacturers took this COVID situation as an opportunity to reduce their dependency on the retailers. So yeah, it's a mix of these two situations that we saw and experienced in France.
Yeah, no, that's really fascinating. Now, I mean, you talked about some of the changes that have occurred because of the pandemic locally. I wondered, have you seen or witnessed or been involved in any new or innovative kind of local publisher models or businesses in the affiliate channel that you think are particularly interesting?
Yes, I saw specific things such as the influence marketing that has been very, very much growing in 2020. It was already growing 2019, but 2020 was even higher. And also the commerce content, because also the media that we all know locally and globally needs to improve their revenues. They are investing also and putting their media on the affiliate side. So commerce content also is growing. For example, last year, we've seen a jump of investment towards those two publishers. At Igraal, the influence marketing is one of our top priorities in terms of member acquisition. And the commerce content is also a product that we sell to our partners. And Q4 last year had been a real success. And this trend, the trend we had in Q4, is showing good signs early this year. And last but not least, I can see locally in France an increase of in-store solutions. Advertisers are more keen to run tests and build new offers around this. And I think also due to the COVID situation, where shops were closed for a long time and they are opening from time to time, this will help to shut down the frontiers and the barriers there is between the online and the offline.
Okay, so just to round things up for us, how would you sum up the French affiliate industry in just three words, Sammy?
So it's difficult in three words. I would say first, there is still a lot to do. It's affiliates, it's a kind of a gold mine, and we are far from having all this gold out. it's also a challenge market, as I said, with between the brands and the retailers, brands manufacturers and the retailers. We are starting to see two different types of partners. So we need to find the best way to work with both of them. And I would say also for the last word, it's mobile and app. Also to go more into on and offline, working together and not as different channels or devices.
Well, that's a great summary of the French market for us, Sammy. And thanks for being our guide to the industry out there. And best of luck to you in the coming months.
Thank you very much.
All Okay, it's number of the month time again on the podcast, and that means we're joined by Craig, our esteemed colleague from the business intelligence team here at AWIN. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Rob.
How you doing?
Yeah, not too bad, thanks.
Good. So what number do you have for us this month?
Cool. So yeah, the number this month is 69.4 billion euros.
What does that entail? Is that the amount of money that you've made while I've been off on paternity leave?
Yeah, pretty much. No, it's actually the recent study from ADEX and the IAB Europe, and it's basically around so that's 69.4 billion euros was the ad spend figure for 2020, and that represents a 6.3% growth year on year.
So that's digital ad spend across the whole continent.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, so to put it into perspective, I suppose obviously 6.3% is, you know, a lot less than previous years, and actually you look globally as well, there's figures out there would suggest a decline, a very small marginal decline, but effectively that's, you know, when looking at kind of obviously the effects of the pandemic in 2020, it's still quite a positive story. It's all relative, and actual growth is kind of hard to come by in most sectors. To put it into perspective as well, the global economy, according to the IMF, was supposed to shrink around 4%, and that was back in June. We'll probably get some more updated figures of the actual slowdown of the global economy this year.
So the fact that digital advertising is kind of growing despite those headwinds is almost kind of proof of the fact that it is doing pretty well. It's very resilient.
Yeah. So it's like, obviously, you know, it is a growing area, and it's just not been affected by the pandemic in the same ways as other industries. And actually, you know, the figures would suggest it's benefited in some areas as well. Again, so like to put that into perspective as well, so that whole figure, so out of the 28 kind of areas that were studied, 24 of that in fact saw growth. So that isn't just one country that's providing that growth. Mm. It's seen across the board. And actually the likes of Germany, which we've spoken about, you know, Eastern European countries benefiting and increasing their growth massively. But the ad spend in Germany increased by 10% last year, which is huge. Mm. Another area as well, of course, is actually how much does the growth in the share for online out of the whole of ad spend, how does that look? And again, we've seen like increases in that area. Obviously, you'd expect general ad spend outside of online to have decreased over that time. We've seen much slower growth in ad spend anyway over the years outside of online. But obviously, the pandemic will have hit that much harder.
Yeah.
The UK, for example, now has like a 73% share of its ad spend is online. Obviously, that's kind of, you know, the forerunner with online anyway. But it's increased from 65% to 73% in a year. In an unlikely year as well. Just to mention as well, Turkey as well has increased their share, and that's actually almost by 12 percentage points on the previous year. So that's huge now for Turkey. And again, we look at countries like Turkey as we've always seen them as kind of potential growth markets, but then you're starting to see that, you know, increase much faster through these, you know, pretty trying times.
Yeah, it's really interesting to see that the progress that they've made during a particularly hard year. And I'd imagine that advertisers in those markets have accelerated the investment that they would have been making otherwise in online advertising, because those regions have tended to be the ones that we're seeing the most acceleration in over the last few years. But last year particularly seems to have been a kind of another order of magnitude in terms of that acceleration, isn't it?
Yeah, that's true. And that goes for, you know, as we were saying before, like Eastern European countries as well. Serbia and Ukraine have both increased as well in that time. The more advanced economies, that doesn't mean, you know, the more advanced digital economies, sorry, that doesn't actually mean that they've not, you know, grown beyond expectation. They still have, you know, they've increased beyond expectation and beaten certain forecasts over that same time period as well for ad spend. So yeah, it's a fairly positive story all around when it comes to online advertising. I think probably what's important as well is kind of projections. So when they bring these out, then obviously people will start to make, you know, future projections on mm-hmm. on the market. When it comes to the kind of the growth projections of digital, you're looking at so you're looking at the current projections for the global ad spend recovery. They're looking to be around 2 years to get back to pre-COVID levels. So it's quite a long time to think about that. So like you're saying, you know, if your whole ad spend, the whole ad spend market, which incorporates digital, to get back to those, you know, pre-COVID levels could take up to 2 years. So that's remembering different countries are going to come out of this at different speeds. You're going to see like kind of growing economies, digital economies like India and things like that. They may struggle because of, you know, the current pandemic and the speed at which they can exit out of it. That may well hamper, you know, growth predictions. However, again, when you look at online in comparison to the whole ad spend industry, then you kind of see gains more for online in that projection, because relative to the whole of the global ad spend, you know, it's going to look more of a positive picture in those 2 years.
Mm.
And as well as something we spoke about before, it's the question actually really comes around whether or not like the new online shopper that we see from the pandemic will continue to shop online, you know, more post-pandemic. And we'll probably be releasing some content around that throughout the year, because that's something we've been measuring, you know, during the pandemic. And I think once you get that relativity between the two periods, that's when we'll start to actually be able to make assumptions on whether or not we've seen, you know, a continuous positive effect of this pandemic with online.
Yeah. Well, it looks like a relatively positive outlook given the pretty trying circumstances of the last 12 to 18 months for the industry. And hopefully the affiliate and partnerships channel will be a beneficiary of that as well.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I think, as I say, we'll be doing some more analysis over the coming months around, you know, how does this look for the affiliate and partnerships sector with online as well, not just within the UK, but Europe and the rest of the world as well.
Great. Well, I look forward to seeing that. Excellent. Or am I writing it?
Someone will.
All right. Cheers, Craig.
All right, mate. Speak to you soon.
Special thanks to all of our guests on this month's episode. And if you want to find out more about the French market, then I can recommend checking out the France chapter of this year's AIM report, which you can find for free online. And I promise that is my last plug for the AIM report this month. Now, as we turn our gaze forwards, there are a couple of dates and events for listeners to keep their eyes peeled for. First of all, the Performance Marketing Awards shortlist has just been announced, with Awin achieving 20 nominations, which we're extremely chuffed about. Once again, we're in the Publisher's Choice of Network category. And so if there are any publishers listening and you feel we're doing a good job, then we'd love your vote. Voting opens from the 7th of June, and we'll post a link to the voting platform in the podcast notes so that you can easily get to it if you are so inclined. Then for those listeners with an interest in what's going on in Germany, Awin's think tank virtual conference is going ahead online this year, so you can catch it wherever you are in the world. The two-day event runs across the 14th and the 15th of June, and they've got a stellar lineup of keynote speakers, including futurologist Nick Sonerman and brand expert Andrea Aranador Ferry. I think I absolutely nailed their names there. along with some really practical sessions from local Awin colleagues highlighting how to make the most of your partnership marketing tactics. In the meantime, what else can listeners look forward to, guys? What have you got, Kev?
So just a quick plug from me. So with my product marketing hat on, we are just about time of recording. It's not live, but hopefully we'll be by the time that the podcast goes out. We are launching 3 dedicated kind of guides for affiliates that are using WordPress, Squarespace, and Wix. So if you're using any of those technologies and you want to know more about how to implement the Publisher Master Tag or elements of the Publisher Master Tag, such as Admission, which is our disclosure tool, then you can go to those sites. And Ed Chapu has created some really nice sort of guides for how to implement each of the different constituent parts of the Master Tag. And also he will be hosting kind of a walkthrough webinar on each of those sites as well. So look out for the dates of those webinars coming in June.
Cool. And what about you, Lee? Any more upcoming dates to look out for in terms of content that's being published or anything like that?
Yeah, I'm back in front of the camera. So on the 8th of June, I am doing a LinkedIn live session with the IMRG. And then I'm going to be doing a webinar with them kind of slightly later in June. Both of those will kind of continue this narrative of digital transformation within retail and just looking at retailers and how they can scale their online business through the outsourcing of innovation within the affiliate channel.
And did we find out, Kev, what IMRG actually stands for?
Yes, we did. Would you like to know?
Nah.
It's Interactive Media in Retail Group, and they've been going for 20 years, apparently.
Oh, there you go. Same as us.
Exactly. 21.
21. Okay, well, I think that's it for this month. So thanks for your time today, chaps. It's good to be back in the host seat this month. We'll be back again next month with another episode of Interviews and Insight from the Affiliate Industry. So we look forward to welcoming you back then. In the meantime, it's goodbye from me. It's goodbye from Kev.
Bye.
And it's goodbye from Lee.
Goodbye.